Today is Wednesday, May 8th, 2019, and I am on Route 20 and 26 going east from Jackson and Jackson Hole, Wyoming, all the way through to Sundance, Wyoming, to go visit Devil's Tower tomorrow. I have passed through Riverton and Hilland, and I'm on my way to Casper. I'll pass through that and then take Route 25 north. And from there, I'll head east again to go to Sundance, Wyoming. These are vast expanses of flatlands rimmed with elevations and mountains and protruding buttes in the distance on either side. And it's filled with sagebrush, or mama sage, as the sign said in the most recent rest area that I stopped at. That sacred sage color has become so beloved to me. It is a color that you see in Marin County on the hills, but through the action of the grasses, and here it's through the action of the sage itself, which apparently is an important foodstuff to wild grazing animals as well as domesticated. A while back, I passed Arapaho and Shoshone areas. I don't know if it's a reservation area, but it's marked off. It was absolutely exquisite. Coming from the Shoshone National Forest and then into that area, which looked quite a bit like Sedona with its striated red rocks punctuated with strips of what looked like sage color, and then huge towering boulder grandmother and grandfathers. Amazing vistas. I got photos of some of it. It was really quite something. I feel so blessed, so very, very blessed to be on this trip. I've been on now for a little over 6 weeks, starting technically April 1st, but really even before, already staying with some friends in their homes as I was releasing my earthly belongings and moving my bed to a storage unit. And really, it's amazing how little we actually need to live on. I've been content with the clothing and the jewelry that I have and my car and some foodstuffs that I keep replenishing. I'm just passing Hell's Half Acre, which is a scenic overlook. I was told about that by somebody in the storage unit who also recommended that I go to Thermopolis, but I'm not going to be able to make that detour. I also noticed that I was passing Sacagawea's resting place further down south if I had turned right, but I knew that I would not be able to do that. There are so many things I would have liked to have gone and visited, and I'd like to learn more about Sacagawea and who her people were and what she was all about. Yesterday I was in the Grand Tetons and the visitor center there, and they have a beautiful museum quality display of the history starting from the first peoples here, the wildlife, the colonizers, and the problems that that brought, and some Native American beadwork and clothing work that's on display there right now. It was quite amazing, and they had in one of their videos that's shown on floor, sort of through floor, large floor tiles that are diffuse, like a glass kind of thing. You hear the strains of the Native American tribal songs and seeing their dancing, and it just pierces the heart to think that these people once, and still do, but in much smaller numbers and in much invaded form, held the medicine of this land, the knowledge of the hills and the plants and the mountain people and all of the rock people. And so I had an experience of that in the Grand Tetons yesterday, where I was just struck with tremendous awe at these mountains that geologists say have been formed by a combination of lava coming from the Yellowstone volcano millions of years ago, and then the action of glaciers just miles high scrubbing down from the north to south, sculpting these hills. But it's much more. I mean, that's just a geological description. We're really, I sense, talking about the birthing of beings. The Deva of the mountain births herself from Mother Earth in combination with all of these forces, and has an identity, has a consciousness and awareness, just like each stone and pebble does, each plant, each vista, each cloud. So it was beautiful to sit with those Tetons, the three major peaks, and then the other ones. I did a transmission of what I received of them being companions and family members, held by the Grand One and supported by the others. And I wanted to know, what were the Native American names of these peaks? Because these peaks are always given names of explorers and colonizers, and always usually male, and whereas in most cultures the mountains are understood to be mountain mothers. So how does that change the energy when you rename a place? It's like plugging it up. But people have been coming for many, many thousands of years, including in recent centuries, to witness and enjoy the splendor of those mountains, and on some level understand that they are sacred. I, prior to that, went to Yellowstone National Park and saw yet more of the splendor of Mother Earth, literally the origin places and pools of all life. And as I transmitted in a Mama Cacao ceremony, one of those mornings, I received that literally those single-celled or multiple-celled creatures that live in that intense heat coming up from the fiery molten lava and the boiling waters filled with sulfur and other minerals, that literally DNA can be created. Those are pools of life. And Mother Earth is parthenogenetic. She's a virgin creatrix. And that is how the DNA can start on the planet. These are ways that it has, and some of the locations that still show us how life is created on this earth. They're remarkable for their energetic beauty and their geological and physical beauty as well. The cascades of water filled with minerals down a sloping hillside create wedding cake looking levels and layers of different color rocks that are colored with the microorganisms that live there and can endure the intense heat. The trickling sounds of the water, the hissing sounds of the gas emitting from certain fissures, it reminded me of things that I know I experienced in past lives in other places like Europe, when those geological formations were still alive. The smell of the sulfur filling the air was remarkable as well, and brought to mind the Delphic Oracle and how perhaps the Oracle was fed by inhaling the fumes so that she could enter into an open state of consciousness. I myself felt myself in a kind of expanded state just from being around the energy of these portals where the water was coming out, trickling or gushing, and emitting the fumes of sulfur. And you understand that all these places that were given demonic associations are actually sources of deep mystery and life. If something is named Diablo or Devil's something or other, you know that it contains much earth power, and that Native Americans knew that, and then the colonizers renamed it and dubbed it something dangerous, when really it was just a power that they couldn't grapple with. So these fissures of sulfuric waters and acids and gases are underworld portals, but portals to the inner earth, to the deep yoni of Mother Earth, she who births all life on this planet. Driving over these vast vistas, I have been through mountainous areas of gorgeous forested places and valleys in Washington State and Oregon, and on into the flatlands of Idaho, and then through to the varied landscape approaching Yellowstone, and then the beauty and the mountainous area of Yellowstone itself, the grand caldera that it is, a very large, large volcanic area that once had volcanic explosions, and its mountains and boulders created from that volcanic activity and movement of magma and the silica and all the minerals of Mother Earth, creating those cascading yellow cliffs that presumably are what Yellowstone is named for. And there were other colors also that were from the pools of beautiful deep burnt orange, red, and other types of yellows, and sometimes greens and even turquoises. On here in the rolling flatlands of Wyoming, I noticed in particular sort of settlements of trailer homes and trailers themselves and trailer parts, cabins that go over trucks and trucks and cars and all manner of kinds of living spaces, some of which look inhabited, some of which look dilapidated and abandoned. And I wonder, who lives here? What do they do? Do they just own this land and dwell on it? Are they... I don't see a tremendous amount of cattle, but they are here. I don't see real farming around here. So I'm thinking, who are these people? Do they feel isolated, or do they feel embraced by the sky and the earth and the sage and the wild animals that they happen upon? out of Northern California and Marin County and other congested areas, realizing that it's time for me now to be with the land. And at one time that felt lonely, but I realized that some of the greatest loneliness can happen in an urban environment or even a suburban environment. There just is a kind of an isolation that seems surprising, but there's not the level of community that would happen perhaps in a smaller, closer area. And I feel that I'm ready for this after decades of thinking that I needed to be in a large metropolitan area to have enough stimulation and variety of people and inputs and things. And now I feel that the input I need is largely from Mother Earth herself and her creatures and her beings. I feel so, so very blessed to have visited and or stayed with a variety of people that I have, some friends, some clients who are also friends or becoming friends. And I feel so blessed and grateful by those who are supporting this pilgrimage in many different ways, through moral support and interest and witnessing, through being part of the Soul Dive series that I am offering, whereby they can enjoy one of my courses and a monthly call with me, which is filled with the energy and up-to-the-minute learnings and information that I'm sharing with everyone. To the clients who are continuing to choose me to be supported by, to those who have contributed to my Sacred Writing Pilgrimage Support Fund. I'm creeping up toward the $3,000 mark to help me in all the expenses for outfitting my car and being on the journey, and those donations continue to come in, and I'm always awestruck at people's generosity. It in some senses puts me to shame and makes me look at my own sense of giving and perhaps need to open that a bit. Being on a vacation for these 2 months, I've chosen April and May to allow myself to just unwind and detox and relax and get out of what very much felt like a rat race that I had created. And this really is my first true vacation that I can remember. I mean, I'm sure that's not true, but just in a very long time, it's really my first extended vacation where I'm not really working except for a bit to keep things running. But I will begin the writing in June, the writing part of the Marguerite's Writing Pilgrimage. Because I realized, especially the first 2 weeks, I was just plumb exhausted from getting ready and then from, you know, years of really pushing it. And then the last 3 weeks have been, I am now in a relaxed mode and I'm able to receive. And it has been glorious to be relaxed and feel my oracle abilities truly being able to open now in this kind of a relaxed state, and having connected with various people who will be collaborators now, and also Mother Earth herself, just putting...
Hello, Marguerite. She just had to get a cute little tuchus out onto these places, all right? We just had to comment. Gloria and Sylvia here. Hello, we're having a good time along with Marguerite. We're seeing a lot of wonderful, wonderful things that we would not ordinarily have been able to see from our vantage point of Long Island in the fifth dimension. And we are just accompanying her in her car. We're enjoying this, but she had to get her butt out onto the land. All right, I mean, you know, you're going to be a holy woman. You're going to be an oracle, whatever you're going to call it. You got to get out of your head sometimes, and you have to really connect with this big cosmos.
Okay, so thank you, Gloria and Sylvia, for that additional commentary and witnessing of my trip. But yeah, I had to get out here, and I didn't realize until I got out here that I truly needed to get out here. And it wasn't just to be able to live in places to write. It was to literally experience the earth beneath my feet. And that's why it's a driving pilgrimage, you know, just to feel this vast expanse and this beauty that is our Mother Earth, particularly right now, Turtle Island. So exquisite. It is just stoked the love within me to tremendous proportions. My reverence and my desire and ability to serve this great Gaia. Yesterday in the visitor center of Yellowstone, no, of the Grand Tetons, excuse me, there was a woman who has been going around to the various national parks, fulfilling all of the requirements to become a junior ranger. And it's like you fill up this book with all things that you needed to accomplish, and then you get it stamped, and you get a badge at these different national parks. And I wish I had filmed it, because she stood there, and I just caught her at the moment where she was getting her oath. She was taking her oath about what she was and it's an oath saying, you know, I swear to uphold the beauty and integrity of this park and this land. And it was just so moving. I just found myself crying. I thought, oh my gosh, this is 10 times more moving than seeing somebody get sworn in as a citizen. And she said that when she gets her little badge, the top says, you know, junior ranger, and she covers up the junior with her name, and she puts it on, and she goes about her work, you know, either enjoying or whatever she's volunteering for in the park. And if she notices that anybody is doing anything out of order that does not support park life, or, you know, technically is a violation, she mentions it, and she draws on her status. And so, you know, it's just her way of upholding this oath that she has made to help protect the land. It was just so incredibly beautiful. And I feel that I am becoming one of those stewards. And you really can only become one of those stewards when you actually get out on the land, spend a lot of time there, pay attention, listen, receive the messages, make the communications, give back the love and the awe and the appreciation, and be in that reciprocal relationship. That is how the stewarding of the earth begins. And then, of course, there are many layers and levels of which, on which you can take it, from cultivating your own garden to becoming part of, you know, the environmental movement in various ways. So it's been truly, truly exquisite. In Yellowstone, I saw deer, elk, a bear mother with her cubs crossing the road, the huge bison crossing the road, a beaver, birds, and probably either a fox or a coyote. And there's much more to be seen there, obviously. So I wanted to give this update on the on the trip, a sort of an audio journal, so that people who are following can just hear my voice and hear some of my impressions in a more personal vein. I've also been offering, as you know, various transmitted oracle transmissions, either that I'm doing or that I'm doing in collaboration with David Todd or others. So there's this writing pilgrimage is very, very fruitful and is an act of service on my part to support Mother Earth and humanity. And so it's turning out to be much more than a rest and much more than a time to write. It's really turning into another whole aspect of my service, my work as a spiritual woman, and my play. And obviously the fairies and the fae have been a big part of this. They were particularly energetically felt by me in Ashland, Oregon, and on Vashon Island in Washington, because the landscape is so very redolent with the particular types of things that are the fairy portals, in and around the trees in particular, and with the delicate native plants. And one thing I learned along the way is that I could tell the difference between a place that had fairy energy and one that didn't. And even as beautiful as a garden might be in some kind of location, if it was manicured and controlled and had plants that were non-native, that were just placed there, if it had wood chips and was probably populated with plants conceived and grown in hothouses or, you know, factory farmed and grown or destroyed through Miracle-Grow and Roundup, then it just had no living energy whatsoever. So it's important that we start discerning where are the places that have living energy and therefore have fairy energy, fae energy, she energy, and where are the places that don't? And what do we need to do to help recultivate the fairies again, to allow the wildness of the land so that they can come back and be restored where they've been taken away, or they can be preserved where they already are? And one thing I'm learning is, you know, clearly Ashland and places like Vashon Island and much of Washington, I believe, and much of Oregon, those places have that fairy look, that fairy energy. When I came into Idaho and now Wyoming, it is quite exquisitely beautiful. Oh yes, Mama Earth. But I'm trying to learn the language of the fairies here, the language of the fae here. It's a little bit less known to me. So I have to feel my way into that. So this is an update from me, Marguerite, on the road. Some musings on these large stretch drives of 9 hours I've been doing, and the landings and the time spent with people and in sacred places of power here on Mother Earth. And so there will be a future update, and goodbye for now. Blessings. Thank you for witnessing, listening, and supporting, whether it's through your hearing or through other ways that you've been participating. Thank you so much. Blessed be.